from KQED.
From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Coming up on Forum this morning, public hearings began yesterday on Governor Jerry Brown's $14.9 billion proposal to construct two 35-mile tunnels below the Sacramento-San Joaquin Delta. Supporters say the project will stabilize water delivery across the state, but opponents argue the tunnels are too costly and will harm the environment. We'll get an update on the controversial project. Join us after this. From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Good morning and welcome to this morning's Forum program. Hearings are underway on the proposed massive public works project to build twin 35-mile long and 40 feet in diameter water tunnels below the Sacramento-San Joaquin Delta in order to pump fresh water away from the Delta to buyers in Southern California and the San Joaquin Valley. Public opinion remains strongly divided, and we take up the debate in this Forum Hour. And let me tell you who is joining us for that debate. John Laird is with us. He's Secretary of the California Natural Resources Agency and is with us this morning from the nation's capital. Welcome, John Laird.
Thank you very much.
Glad to have you. I also want to welcome Jay Lund, who's at UC Davis. He directs the Center for Watershed Sciences there and is also an adjunct fellow at the PPIC Water Policy Center. Welcome, Jay Lund.
Thank you.
And we also welcome to this hour Barbara Berrigan-Perea. She's Executive Director of Restore the Delta. Also with us by phone this morning. Welcome to the program.
Thank you, Michael. Good morning.
Good morning to you. And let me begin, if I may, John Laird, with you. And John Laird, again, is Secretary of the California Natural Resources Agency. And we're talking about the hearings first with you, John Laird. I know you were there, and I'd like to hear what you observed. But first, for the benefit of listeners who may be unfamiliar with this massive public works project under the title of California Water Fix, can you give us kind of a brief outline of what we're talking about here so people can understand broadly what it is?
Yes, and let me make two points with it. First, when the California Water Project was constructed in the 1960s, it was focused around pumps at Tracy at the base of the Delta and hooked it into various aqueducts to distribute the water. Those pumps reverse flows in the streams there, draw fish into the South Delta where they don't belong, and also doesn't allow for taking water in excessive flows to store for dry years. And what is proposed in the project is changing where the intakes are. So there's three intakes in the Sacramento River to the north and move the water to the Tracy pumps and then into the distribution system. And so it's basically a proposal to do that, and the hearings are to ground truth that proposal and see how it would actually operate. The one other thing I just wanted to say for starters, and I know we'll get into this, is you set up the discussion by saying moving water to the San Joaquin Valley and to Los Angeles, and the San Francisco Bay Area in a major way depends on this water as well. And we can talk about that when we get into it.
No, I'm glad you mentioned that because we're talking actually about 40% of the water from 50% of the water that goes to out of Santa Clara in the South Bay. So there is a great deal of effect here in Northern California too. But let me ask you about the hearings themselves, because a couple of years ago the EPA said this project could cause more harm, and there was a preliminary draft that I know was responded to on some level, but where are we now just in terms of where we've moved forward from that EPA report?
I think the whole environmental impact report comment period was reopened after that, and additional comments were taken. And now this process really ground truths how it would actually operate and sort of takes what everybody on this show will take, say, in differing opinions and checks them out and comes up with a ruling about what really is needed in the Delta consistent with how this project would operate. So it's a chance to, even though the project, the EIR was amended and there are additional comments and it still can be changed up until the point that a permit is issued, this process will really guide that in a major way. And people are looking to decide whether to fund it based on what the project turns out to be, based on how this process ground truths all the differing views and differing facts that are on the table.
And I do want to talk with you and our other guests about funding as well. But I think I want to hear more about the project from you, if I could, just so people, again, can get a real clear understanding of what we're talking about with these twin tunnels, 35 miles long and 40 feet in diameter. They're going to be below the Sacramento-San Joaquin Delta, and the real purpose is to pump fresh water away from the delta?
It's just changed the point of diversion, and the point of diversion would be 30 miles to the north of where it is now. And where in the past there was the peripheral canal proposal that the people voted down in 1982, this is 40% the size of that. And in order to do less disturbance, it's do it as tunnels and be more seismically safe. And it is such outmoded technology in the pumps in the delta that were constructed basically in the 1960s that it's really difficult to fish screen in a successful way as it pulls the fish down there. And in the diversions that are to the north, you can screen in a modern way, in a different way, not draw the fish so that they have to be trucked back, which happens now from the South Delta to the extent that you can capture them. And this also provides resiliency, not just because against seismic issues, but sea level rise. And I chair the Ocean Protection Council. We have science that the median for California at the end of the century could be 5.5 feet of sea level rise. And if you look at just what 1 foot of sea level rise would do to the delta, it's phenomenal, and it has these impacts that we really need to try to protect against as we move forward.
Again, if you just joined us, we're talking to John Laird, the Secretary of the California Natural Resources Agency, and Governor Brown has brought in Bruce Babbitt, who former Secretary of the Interior. He has been strongly in favor of this project. He's talked about increasing water availability and protecting the ecosystem. There is another major obstacle I'd like to talk, Secretary Laird, with you about, and that is, at this point, Endangered Species Act. Need a declaration from the Obama administration, do we not?
Yes. We really need whether it's a declaration, it's really a program on how, in their view, a project would operate with regard to endangered species. And it comes in two places. It's really the National Marine Fisheries, which is in the Department of Commerce and NOAA, and it is the Fish and Wildlife Service, which is in the Department of the Interior. And there are also issues with state agencies. But if you really look overall, and it'll come up regularly in this discussion, there are about five agencies that interact with this in a major way. And it's three fish agencies, one state, two federal, and it's the Bureau of Reclamation Water Supply on the federal side, and it's the Department of Water Resources on the state side.
And could you talk for a moment also, Secretary Laird, about capturing water? I know you feel we missed a lot because of you alluded to it before, outdated pumping system that has to be in some ways, redone in effect. We need to maximize storage, don't we?
Yes. And right now, with the existing system, you can't reach out and take the water that is in excessive flows and excessive storms. For example, since the first of the year this year, when it started to rain again in the tributary areas to the delta, I think by March or April, 500,000 acre feet of water flowed by after we did what we had to do to protect the environment under the biological opinions and after we dealt with what we might need for water supply. And so it's those excessive flows, because as hard as it is to believe, it's down to California's water resiliency depending on five or six big storms a year. If they happen, we sort of make it. If they don't, we don't. We saw what happened in the drought. And we don't have the ability to take that extra water to store for the dry years right now because of the way the system is configured.
John Laird with us from Sacramento, again, a secretary of California Natural Resources Agency. We're also joined this hour by Barbara Berrigan-Perea, and she's executive director of Restore the Delta. It's not only the state water board hearings that I guess we could describe as a hurdle, Barbara Berrigan-Perea. This project has to get through reviews by local, state, federal agencies, as well as I've indicated, satisfied the U.S. Endangered Species Act. And I want to also mention one other thing and get your take on this. There's a Proposition 53, which will be on the November ballot, the so-called No Blank Checks Initiative, and that figures into this as well. It was put on the ballot pretty much or funded to a great degree by a Stockton farmer and businessman by the name of Dean Cartapassi and is headed toward the November ballot. This would be a threat to the whole project, wouldn't it?
Well, Michael, actually, Proposition 53, it's not our initiative. Restore the Delta and the people of the Delta haven't taken a position on it because it is more than the Delta tunnels. We support legislation.
Excuse me, it also involves fast track, too, yeah.
Right, and that's exactly why.
In fact, forgive me for a moment. I should spell this out a little bit for listeners because I think it is important. It would mean, in effect, that anything over $2 billion, any project over $2 billion, would have to have complete public support. That is, all the citizens would have to vote in favor of it. I'm sorry. Go ahead, Barbara, please.
So we don't support the initiative. We have no position on it. We support legislation for a straight-out vote on the tunnels only. And honestly, we actually see the most important battle presently as what is happening at the State Water Resources Control Board. I think ground truthing is a really unusual way to describe these proceedings. The burden of proof is on the Department of Water Resources and the Bureau of Reclamation to show that no Delta water users or landowners will be harmed by this change in point of diversion. We believe it is absurd to think that a project which will remove half of the freshwater from entering the estuary on the Sacramento River side will improve water quality for fisheries or Delta farms or for local drinking water supplies. DWR and the Bureau have a 40-year track record of destroying 90% of our fisheries. As Secretary Laird is talking about an antiquated system that isn't capturing excess flows, he forgot to mention that we have a problem where we have overpumped the system for nearly 40 years. We've had this 90% decline in fisheries. And when you go through the details in the environmental impact report for the project, which show that we would create new reverse flows, that the existing pumps at the south end of the Delta would still be in use 52% of the time unscreened, and that we would have extremely degraded water quality in the Delta for drinking water, for farming, for recreation, and fisheries.
So it's your position, I mean, essentially the tunnels will not only do harm where the Delta is concerned, but diminish the fish population as well?
Oh, it will finish off the last 10% that we have left that hasn't been destroyed from years of overpumping. It will also harm the ecosystem for the San Francisco Bay. Delta flows keep the San Francisco Bay healthy.
And what about, I mean, what kind of fish are we talking about, first of all, mainly?
We're talking about several runs of Chinook salmon, Delta smelt, longfin smelt, sturgeon, steelhead, shad. Literally every fishery in the Delta does worse with the Delta Tunnels proposed project.
And what else do you have in the way of concerns? I mean, you certainly expressed right off the top your major concerns. But in addition to that, I think there are other things that that your group has brought into the public attention and would want to bring now to the table here.
Well, you know, one, when you take out that much water from the Sacramento River, you're going to end up with increased polluted water from flows that flow into the Delta and Bay from the San Joaquin River. We will see unhealthy increases in salt, selenium, borons, bromides, and a propensity, because there will be warmer water and less flow throughout the Delta, for an increase in toxic algal blooms that create bacteria that can kill fish, wildlife, and people.
I want to get Jay Lund in this, but first, Secretary Laird, could you respond to some of the concerns that have been expressed just now by Barbara Berrigan-Perea?
And I think that when I said ground truth, the point was just made because, yes, there is a view that through all the work, this will not be harmful, but and there is a desire to prove it. But those things that were just said will be truthed out in this. For 40 years, yes, there's been pumping, but it's not been static. And what happened is that there have been additional environmental protections that were enacted along the way. The amount of pumping from the first decades has dropped a bunch. The proposal would, in effect, only take what happens now in dry years or in average years, although with climate change, what an average year is may be changing. And so there's no difference in the take. It's just trying to take it in a way that is more protected and deals with fish and protects against salinity and all these things. And without taking an hour to explain it, we believe that's been demonstrated. And those are the facts that will be debated in the process.
Well, let me ask you, Barbara Berrigan-Perea, what kind of solution do you want for the Delta? I mean, there's been massive habitat loss for endangered salmon. What kind of restoration do you want to see?
We have a four-point plan at Restore the Delta. First and foremost, we've never been against sharing water. We want the Delta Reform Act to be upheld in California where reliance on Delta water is reduced. And you do that by creating regional self-sufficiency projects throughout the state so that people aren't as dependent on exports from the Delta. We want to see levees upgraded to protect the 4 million people who live in the Delta. People keep talking about the tunnels as a solution for sea level rise, but the truth is the tunnels aren't going to protect the 4 million people who live behind the levees. And if we do not mitigate for sea level rise properly, starting from the San Francisco Bay all the way into the Delta, science is showing us that at the extreme end of sea level rise, the new intakes will be under salt water. So it doesn't solve that problem either.
Let me bring Jay Lund to this again. He's director of the Center for Watershed Sciences at UC Davis and also adjunct fellow at the PPIC Water Policy Center. You're kind of sort of in the middle of all this in many ways, Jay Lund, huh?
That's my predicament.
Well, but maybe you can help enlighten our listeners as to what your predicament is. I mean, what do you see on the positive side? What do you see on the negative?
Well, you know, I think we have to step back and realize that the Delta is not a very natural place today, and it hasn't been for 150 years. It began as a product of sea level rise. The Delta was not a delta. It was a mere confluence of the Sacramento and San Joaquin rivers up until about 6,000 years ago when sea level rise slowly moved the Delta from the Sacramento-San Joaquin River upstream and into a drowned confluence of the where it is today.
And we should mention there are many in the Delta region who are vowing to fight. I mean, there's still no support from many of the water agencies as well. But
I think that's true, and there's a lot of realistic concerns, and some of them have been expressed on both sides for the water supply in the long term and for the Delta residents and the ecosystem. But I think we have to understand that this is a very unnatural system, and it's very precarious now in terms of water supply, in terms of the native fish, and in terms of the landscape being protected by the Delta levees and the water quality. It really takes a comprehensive view to look at all these things together with some strategic thinking. Well, there's a lot of opposition because we have a very fragmented governance for the Delta, which in many ways has been very accountable and responsive, but makes it very difficult to make strategic decisions.
I mentioned cost before, too. There's a big brouhaha and polarization over where the money's going to come from. There's Restore the Delta Group, and then there's Zone 7. And, you know, we're talking about whether property tax money ought to be involved to fund the tunnels and just where the revenue ought to come from. But I get back to the sense of whether we're protecting the stability of the Delta as opposed to perhaps a threat to the Delta environment. I mean, how do you see it, Jay?
I think some kind of a project is going to be needed in the longer term to protect the water supply deliveries from the Delta for the San Francisco Bay Area as well as San Joaquin Valley. In addition, we're going to have to address simultaneously the ecosystem problems and the levee problems in a condition with rising sea levels.
And if I could find out maybe from you, Secretary Laird, about the timeline on this, can you give us a sense of what we're talking about with the hearings and where things are going to, the trajectory of where things are going to move?
The hearings are projected to take roughly 6 months. And so the question is if there's a decision at the end of 6 months and it's a decision that is consistent with where the direction of the project is, then the EIR at some point could be finalized and then you could move ahead and deal with the permitting process. As you said earlier, there are a few other pieces to come into play. One of the reasons people haven't made a commitment on financing is waiting to see what the project is. There is the financing issue and there is making sure that the fish agencies and others make a statement of how they think the project could operate and what the needs for fisheries would be. And once again, you would see if that is truly addressed by the project.
Let me go back to Jay Lund again. And once again, he directs the Center for Watershed Sciences at UC Davis and is an adjunct fellow at the PPIC. That's the, by the way, the Public Policy Institute of California Water Policy Center. What about the argument that we're hearing that this is not only too expensive, but I want to get to the real core of concern of many in the Delta that's harmful to the estuary? Jay Lund?
Well, I think in terms of the cost, one of the virtues of this kind of proposal is that the major infrastructure will be paid for by the users. And that's usually a pretty good screen on whether something is financially or economically viable, at least for the users.
But is it a threat to the Delta environment? I mean, this is a concern.
Right, so yeah. This is the second point. In terms of the Delta environment, I think there are, if you operate this kind of facility correctly, it might do some benefit. If you do it, operate it incorrectly, it could do some harm, as with most of the infrastructure in and around the Delta, the levees included. So we have to, I think, be pretty careful on the Delta ecosystem. It's very precarious right now in the north for the native species. But I don't think the tunnels, and the modeling, I think, indicates this, is of a tremendous magnitude of importance for the Delta relative to the many other kinds of stressors and alterations that the Delta has experienced.
All right, we are coming up on a break, and I want to bring our listeners into this discussion. I know many of you have certainly thoughts and concerns on this issue of Delta tunnels, the whole project, which is now under scrutiny as the hearings begin. We'd like to hear from you. We'd like to hear your thoughts, obviously, but also any questions you might have. Our toll-free number is available. It's 866-733-6786, and you can join us now. That number again, 866-733-6786. By the way, I mentioned Zone 7. That's a water agency. Let me just clarify that. We do welcome your calls and your emails. You can email us forum@kqed.org or post questions or comments or concerns onto our website, kqed.org/forum, or tweet us. Our Twitter handle's @KQEDForum. Again, our phone number, toll-free, 866-733-6786. Feel free to join us. This is Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. Here's what's coming up on Forum in our second hour this morning. First, we'll get an update on the Sabranas Fire in Monterey County, which has scorched more than 23,000 acres, destroyed at least 20 homes, and forced the evacuation of 300 people. And then at 10:30, playwright and actor Aaron Davidman will join us in the studio. A film based on his acclaimed one-man show, Wrestling Jerusalem, is premiering at San Francisco's Jewish Film Festival tonight. And to listen to past shows and join the discussion, visit kqed.org/forum. And for the latest updates on our programs and guests, find us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter. We're @KQED Forum. This is Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. Public hearings began on Tuesday on Governor Brown's $14.9 billion proposal to construct two 35-mile tunnels below the Sacramento-San Joaquin Delta. And supporters say the project, officially named California Water Fix, will stabilize water delivery across the state. But opponents argue the tunnels are too costly and will harm the estuary. We're getting an update on the controversial project and hearing a number of views on it, and we certainly welcome yours as well. You can join us at our toll-free number, 866-733-6786. Other ways to join us are by emailing us, forum@kqed.org, or going to our website, kqed.org/forum, and clicking on the segment. And you can also tweet us. Our Twitter handle is @KQEDForum. I should mention here, by the way, that Jeffrey Keitler, who is general manager and CEO of the Southern California Metropolitan Water District, has said this is not a done deal, said this as the hearings begin. They play, obviously, a fairly significant role in all this. There are many things to get past. He has said, for example, that if the Twin Tunnels package is a fair proposal, he will support it. But there are many people who are still up in the air, and there's a lot of, as we fleshed out in this first half hour of our program, a lot of disagreement on this. Let me tell you who is with us again. John Laird is the Secretary of California Natural Resources Agency, with us from the state capital, Sacramento. And Barbara Berrigan-Perea is director, that is executive director of Restore the Delta. Jay Lund is director of the Center for Watershed Sciences at UC Davis and an adjunct fellow at the PPIC Water Policy Center. And let's go right to your calls. And let me begin with Joan from San Jose. You're on the air.
I think that the local communities need to have some kind of inducement to store water locally in some non-evaporative, small areas. Also, vernal ponds should be enlarged so that throughout the state there is storage of water, community by community, and that this gets paid for perhaps by some big project or locally. But it's very important to catch the runoff as it exists and then to look at maybe piping excess from flooding, et cetera, in the north of the bay, where sometimes there's terrible floods, to the south in some kind of project or tunnel, the southern part of the state, which has horrible fires now and terrible drought still continuing.
Thank you for that suggestion. Jay Lund, you want to respond to it?
Yes, I think the caller brings up an excellent point that really these tunnels are not the only thing that needs to be done for California water management. And in fact, there's really no silver bullet for the water management problems in California. This is just one effort that would allow more flexible operations of the system and more flexible movement and improved water quality throughout the system. But the caller is, I think, completely right that throughout much of the state we need to infiltrate more water, surplus water into groundwater, and capture it, and as well as not only for drinking water quality and water supply, but also for stormwater management.
And let me thank the
and
caller,
Michael.
And we're going to go right to another caller, and that's William in Los Gatos. William, you're on. Morning.
Hi. Yeah, thanks for including me. Appreciate it. I wanted to comment on Mr. Laird's opinion that the Twin Tunnels would do anything for water catchment. I have reviewed the EIR. I've followed this subject very closely for the last several years. I'm a native Californian, grew up on the Delta, and the water that's being exported from the tunnels is being used or will be used, would be used for agriculture in Kern County. Unsustainable farming that frankly shouldn't be there in the first place. And I think California is very ready. We recognize the need for water catchment. We should be spending this money instead of creating these preposterous tunnels. We should be spending that on water catchment. We can do better usage with groundwater. We can reuse gray water. We need to be able to capture more of that water that we get in these storms and not try to send it to Southern California area for farming that shouldn't take place in the first place.
William, let me get Secretary Lay to respond to you. John Laird.
Thank you.
Yes, the perfect example to William and the previous caller is actually their home area in Santa Clara County. In the 50s and the 60s, when orchards were turned into subdivisions, there was massive groundwater overdraft, and they were in danger of running out of supply, and they did what was suggested. They did major dams and catchment, Lexington, Anderson, other reservoirs. They used it to go into percolation ponds across the Santa Clara Valley. The groundwater table returned. It was good groundwater management way before it was mandated. It was the best catchment they could do. And given what happened in the Santa Clara Valley, it only supplies water to 45% of the needs, and they've had to import 55% from outside, from both Hetch Hetchy and the Delta, to make their budget. And so the question is after you maximize it, are there ways to lessen reliance? And that's exactly what William just suggested. They've done a great ground recycling plant in San Jose. But if you were to displace one-fifth of the imported water in the Santa Clara Valley, you would have to have 111 recycling plants, which is probably not possible. So the question is how do you do a mix of everything and still have imported water? How do you do more recycling? How do you do more conservation? How do you do more stormwater capture? But that at the current usage levels or even some substantial conservation won't displace the need to have some level of imported water. And when it constantly said it goes to agriculture or Southern California, it goes to Southern Alameda County. As Michael mentioned, Zone 7, which for listeners is the Livermore and Amador Valleys, which is 83% on Delta water. So you have Santa Clara, parts of Napa, Southern Alameda, Eastern Alameda. Contra Costa has its own Delta water system. They're all on Delta water right now in the Bay Area. They all need to import water, and we want to work with them, and that's what the Water Bond does, is provide a lot of water for alternatives or money for alternatives in water. But there will still need to be some mix of imported water to make the Bay Area water systems work.
And once again, John Laird is Secretary of California Natural Resources Agency. Before I go to more calls, I want to go back to Barbara Berrigan-Perea, who is Executive Director of Restore the Delta. The concern that many have might be summed up in concern about the status quo. I'd asked you before, Barbara Berrigan-Perea, about what might be placed forward to this California citizens in lieu of this project. Would you concede, though, that there's real risk to species that's ongoing and that the water deliveries are erratic?
In terms of the water deliveries, they have been consistently too much. During the last 2 years of drought, through emergency orders, water quality standards were rolled back 15 times in the Delta. And that is because every time we hit drought, the first thing that is sacrificed is water quality for all beneficial uses in the Delta. I'd also like to talk a little bit about the Santa Clara Valley Water District. Secretary Laird continues to talk about how they are dependent on Delta water for about 40% of their water use. Nobody is saying that their exports from the Delta should go away. As industrial municipal users, we believe that the water that can be safely shared from the Delta should go to our urban centers where we have great beneficial use, because those are the economic drivers for the state of California. However, if you take a look at the total amount of water that they use that's exported from the Delta compared to all the other users, it makes up about 4 to 5% of the water taken from the Delta. In normal water years, 70% of the water taken from the Delta goes for that large industrial agriculture down the west side of the San Joaquin Valley. Also, you know, Metropolitan Water District said they won't pay for the project if those growers in Westlands and San Luis Delta Mendota don't participate financially. A couple weeks ago, Fitch Credit Rating Services said that San Luis Delta Mendota and Westlands will be taking on about $400 to $800 million in new debt to clean up their drainage-impaired polluted lands for the settlement that they've worked on with the federal government. They're already on negative credit watch. They can't afford 40% of the $17 billion project. And so we are continuing to be dragged through this process at the State Water Resources Control Board. 10 years of processes with the government, spending $250 million already. If we would have taken that money and we would have invested it into groundwater capture, cisterns, good urban capture of runoff in places like Santa Clara Valley, and down in Los Angeles. We would be way ahead in the conservation game for the era of continuing drought.
And again, Barbara Berrigan-Perea is executive director of Restore the Delta. I want to go back to you, Jay Lund, if I may. Jay Lund directs the Center for Watershed Sciences at UC Davis. Here's a tweet, and it's probably a question you've heard, I imagine, on many occasions. David tweets, how does this differ from the 1960s peripheral canal? He uses the word abomination.
This is a much smaller facility. So the current proposal is for 9,000 cubic feet per second as opposed to 22,000 cubic feet per second in the 1980s proposal. The 1980s proposal would have cut off all the east side streams and would have had a lot of surface environmental difficulties, problems that the current proposal would not have. It's much smaller than the original proposal and avoids a lot of the surface environmental impacts that the original proposal had.
Well, I have another question for you, actually, Jay Lund, from a listener named Jack, who says, Mr. Lund stated that the new diversion point would allow water to be diverted as a different point upstream in the Sacramento River. Is he saying the pumps in Tracy would no longer be used?
No, the current proposal is that the intakes up on the Sacramento River, a little bit downstream of Sacramento, upstream of Walnut Grove, would take water to the current Clifton Court forebay for the State Water Project.
We're going to go up north to Oregon and welcome another caller. Brian, that's you. You're on the air.
Hey. Hello. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
Hello, Forum. I just wanted to quickly say, well, I started out in Benicia is one thing. Second, you know, the town at the bottom of Mount Shasta has almost become, or Lake Shasta, I mean, has almost become livable again until this last winter. So it might be blood from a turnip by the time this project is finished. I wanted to remind listeners to read Cadillac Desert again so they can know what kind of insanity was averted. And I thought this thing, you know, this kind of thinking, it's, you know, went away 50 years ago.
That book still holds up. I would affirm that. It still holds up very well. Yeah.
I would. My question is about polling or public opinion. I don't have a sense. You know, I'm sure the money, the California farmers is behind the project, but I'm going to come home down there to protest myself. So that's it. Thank you, Michael.
All right. Thank you for that. Although we should go on record as saying not all the farmers are behind this project. I mean, you get different regions and you get different support and different people who are not supporting. Elizabeth asks, let me go to you on this, Secretary Laird. If the project were seen to completion, how do they keep saltwater from entering the Delta's ecosystem?
Well, the project is designed to regulate with how much is taken or not taken to deal with salt. And one of the things that's forgotten is that, as Jay was mentioning, this is the most heavily engineered location in the world. And before there was the Central Valley Project and even the State Water Project, when there was an incredible drought in the 1930s, salt water came up in the unengineered delta as far as I think it was Clarksburg, just south of Sacramento. And so now there's requirements for releases and requirements to maintain the salinity gradient at the edge of the delta so that salt doesn't come in. And so that's taken into account in the project. And I think one of the things when you talk about 40 years ago or what's happened in 40 years or what's changed since the peripheral canal is that we have biological opinions that came in the middle that really require that all these things be taken into account. You have to remember that there were no environmental laws, modern environmental laws, CEQA, endangered species, in place when this was first constructed, and it's been modified by legislation and decisions. And in addition, there's a companion piece to this project which does restoration. There's never been major restoration done in the Delta, and we have just started 9,000 acres and want to go before the end of this administration to 30,000 acres so that regardless of whether the water project is built, we are moving ahead on ecological restoration for fish and terrestrial species that exist in the Delta.
Let me bring in more of our callers. Jesse joins us next. Jesse, thank you for waiting. You're on the air.
Hi, thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I seem to recall in my activist years back, I think it was probably mid-80s, there was a whole flap over the Colorado River being diverted, and that would probably be something to look at as a model of the possible devastation if this happens. So anyway, I'm sorry, I don't have more information than that. I'm sure a lot of people out there already do, and I'll take answers and stuff.
Well, it's an important point to bring up, and Jay Lund, maybe you can give us some background on that diversion of Colorado River.
Oh, yeah, I think it's a really interesting point. The Colorado River Delta has been completely devastated, almost to non-existence, by upstream water diversions. The major environmental flows to the Colorado River Delta are now drainage flows that come out of Arizona and Mexico. The proposal, I think, for the California Delta is very different, that it would not, as I see it, take a tremendously larger amount of water out of the away from Delta outflows compared to what we have today, particularly for the water quality and endangered species purposes.
And let me go back to you, Barbara Bergen-Perea. And Barbara Bergen-Perea, again, is Executive Director of Restore the Delta. A question from Morgan, who says, California has interfered with nature to the point of deprivation of water that should have flowed to clean out the Delta, provide habitat, and protect endangered species. They are sinking our ground, and my well has gone dry 2 times. What can a person that lives in the San Joaquin Valley do to stop this water grab?
A person in the San Joaquin Valley can, I think I'm a little bit confused by the question. People in the San Joaquin Valley, not everyone receives water from the Delta. We have a lot of water that goes 70% to the west side of the San Joaquin Valley. So not everyone in the San Joaquin Valley on the east side of the valley is dependent on Delta water. In terms of,
I think this listener is.
In terms of making sure that there is adequate flow through the Delta that can be shared, we have to go back to what was agreed upon in the 2010 hearings in front of the State Water Resources Control Board, where fishery agencies, government agencies, and NGOs reached broad consensus that there must be more water flowing through the Delta and out into the San Francisco Bay. You can only divert safely about 20 or 25% of an estuary without fundamentally altering it. In terms of restoration, the projects that Secretary Laird alluded to are projects that must be completed and should have been completed in 2008 under the biological opinions. We will actually have a net loss of wetlands in the Delta with the construction of the Delta tunnels, which is, you know, quite a concern.
How much of the water actually, maybe we can clarify this, Barbara Barrington-Perea, if you can't, Jay Lund can, but how much of the Bay Area's water actually comes from the Delta? Is it really like 95%? I better go to Jay Lund on that because he's...
The Bay Area gets about 30% of its water supply directly from the Delta pumps, from the state and federal water projects and Contra Costa Water District. The overall, however, the Bay Area gets about 70% of its water from the Delta if you include the upstream diversions from the McCalmy River and the Tuolumne River by East Bay Mud and San Francisco PUC.
Yeah. And would there be...
most of your listeners are drinking Delta water,
yeah.
Water that would have flowed to the Delta.
But you also have to remember the project does not interfere with export levels for people who are getting their water for East Bay Mud or from Hetch Hetchy. And, you know, an interesting point about the Contra Costa Water District is that they went in and negotiated their own private settlement with Kell Water Fix to have a new pipeline, because if they had to continue taking water for their half a million water users with the new intakes in place, the water would have been so degraded, it would have not met Clean Water Act standards for their water users.
Can I go back to you on this, John Laird?
Yes, I think that's not exactly right, because the real thing is that the Contra Costa Water District recognizes that there's multiple stressors, that even a 1 foot sea level rise over time changes the 100-year sort of tidal flood impact to 10 years, and that their water is threatened by that stressor as much as anything else. So I think there are all these different stressors that are the reasons that they entered into that deal.
And I want to bring another caller on here, and that's John joining us from Santa Clara. John, you're on.
Hi.
Hi.
Yeah, I think that this is maybe a short-term expensive solution, because if sea level rises or when it rises, it makes more sense to put a dam underneath Golden Gate Bridge, as radical as that sounds. If you look at the map, putting levees around two airports, port, Oracle's campus and everything else would be 100 times more expensive than choking that bottleneck. And every drop of fresh water that would flow down that river, I'm sure we would use up if we let people.
John, let me ask Secretary Laird. What's the plan for sea level rise, John Laird?
I think that obviously this project is one, but there are many, many, many things that we have to do for resiliency on sea level rise. And if, in fact, over the next 90 years it gets to 5 feet in California, in the bay you're going to have to do marshy wetlands and different things, as well as maybe even retreat of certain buildings in certain places or certain dams and dikes in concert with it, just to deal with safety. And you have all your infrastructure, whether it's roads, whether it's water systems that are gravity flow to the current sea level, whether it's sewer systems that are a lot of times force main to the current level of it, all those are affected. And so it's going to be a massive public works event, and that this is a gradual thing, but it's the extreme events that drive it home. And really every local government across the Bay Area is starting to think about this and has to think about it and has to incorporate it into their planning and even their infrastructure projects now.
And John Laird, again, is Secretary of California Natural Resources Agency. And our next caller is Andrea from Los Angeles. Andrea, you're on.
Hi. Thank you for having me. I would like to ask any of the proponents, why should we as taxpayers and ratepayers be paying for something that is not going to benefit us in terms of new water, especially here in Southern California, and that is just going to benefit basically big oil and big ag in the Central Valley?
John Laird.
That's a very good question. That's not true. But the thing about it is that Southern California gets a lot of credit for the fact that in the last generation, they've grown by 4 to 5 million people south of the Tehachapis on the same amount of water they have conserved. That has handled their growth. But what it does is it makes the underlying water really necessary for that conservation. And they rely on some local supplies, but the Colorado River, the Delta, and a little bit on the Owens Valley. And if you don't have an underlying reliable supply, you can't conserve, you can't recycle. And what this is really about is the resiliency of the current supply so that it allows all those other things in the portfolio that lead to lesser dependence over time to work. And so it's really hard for people to understand that without this project, the amount of water they get from the Delta will drop over time as the Delta deteriorates if this is not addressed. And that's going to lead to major water supply problems around the San Francisco Bay Area, the Central Valley, and Southern California.
There's a caller on point here. I'm sorry, Barbara, you want to say something? Barbara Berrigan for you?
Yes, I just want to say that the project does not deal with the number one water problem that we are facing in California, and that is that demand outstrips supply fivefold, and the tunnels will not solve that problem. We need to share water with the areas that are the economic driving forces in the state. What doesn't make sense is to continue to apply good water after bad water for agriculture on the west side of the San Joaquin Valley that contributes 0.3% to the state's GDP, almonds for exports, for big industrial growers that aren't job creators. It isn't about protecting a food source. We can protect 90-95% of our agriculture in California. We need to retire those drainage-impaired lands so that we can free up water supply, so that we can protect areas outside of the Delta, so that there is some water to share while we put in great conservation and regional self-sufficiency plans throughout the state.
All right, I want to try to get Michael in here, who's been waiting patiently. Michael, go ahead.
Thank you very much. I have a couple open-ended questions. Is it ethical, responsible, or prudent to sell water reliability in a state that has gone through multiple 20 to 100-year droughts over the last 2,000 years? I have one other question. If the Delta is currently an unnatural place, why are we building another piece of unnatural infrastructure? Why not restore the estuary back to a more natural state, specifically scale back corporate agribusiness in the semi-arid desert and invest in regional self-sufficiency in urban areas? Australia's response to the millennium drought gives a perfect case study for what's wrong with massive industrial-scale projects and what works about small, incremental projects in urban areas for regional self-sufficiency.
Michael, thank you for the call. Let me go to Jay Lund on the points you've raised or the questions you've raised here. Jay Lund?
Well, you know, I think there's a lot of great things and things we need to do at the small scale in terms of water conservation, reducing water use, both in agriculture and in cities. And there's a lot of local scale things we can do to augment supply, particularly in some areas. But if you look at the quantities of water that people use, both in cities and for agriculture, it's huge. And given the hydrology of the state, you almost need to have some very, very large facilities that capture those very large wet season flows, larger wet season flows, and move them across into the dry season. We're really stuck in this dry climate if we want to have a large population and a large economy with really industrial scale movement, you know, just like we require industrial scale transportation systems for our normal existence in the state.
Well, we'll be continuing to cover this story and, in fact, talking about water. It's inevitable when you're in the state of California. I want to thank all our guests. Actually, we're going to talk about fire next in the opening segment of our next hour, the big fire that's going on in Monterey. I want to thank Jay Lund from the Center for Watershed Sciences at UC Davis, John Laird, who is Secretary of the California Natural Resources Agency, and Barbara Berrigan-Perea, Executive Director of Restore the Delta. Forum is produced by Judy Campbell, Irene Noguchi, Tina Larberg, and Jeremy Siegel. Engineer is Danny Bringer. Engagement producer Amanda Stupai, with online support from Amanda Font. Interns are Brandon Yu and Maxine Sheffer-Wolf. Senior editor Dan Zoll. Executive producer is Joanne Wallace. Thank you for listening. I'm Michael Krasny.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio, the Germanicos Foundation, and the Generosity Foundation, and by a generous gift from Jan Schremm and Maria Minetti Schremm, founders of Clos Pegas Winery, who believe that all people deserve access to education, information, and culture for a lifetime of exploration and learning.